So if you have the strength, I will try to convey the information or the idea of how much we have learned about QCD from perturbative studies, how much phenomenological evidence and something about the technology. So in order to do that, I have to focus on a subject, and that is going to be the jet physics. So I discuss how to study them, how to get a perturbative prediction and problem with confinement, and then I will discuss, give an idea about the Monte Carlo simulation, which are actually an important instrument for the experimentalist, the instrument on which is based the idea that QCD is solved, and the rest is background. And then I will give some perspective. So since 73, after asymptotic freedom, there have been a lot of perturbative QCD study with the aim of making quantitative prediction. But since the beginning, there is a conflict with confinement, and the thing is that whenever you talk about hadrons, then you get collinear and infrared divergences, and you cannot compute anything in perturbative QCD. So the strategy is try to stay away from hadrons and to be inclusive. But even if you are inclusive, then you have problems. And since the beginning, you know that there are two inclusive quantities. One is the structure function in deep inelastic, and the other is the fragmentation function in E plus E minus, for instance. And these two quantities have collinear singularities, actually, because there is one hadron involved here. And the way to forget about, to solve to avoid the problem, is based on the fact that there is this collinear factorization of the collinear divergences. So you cannot predict the quantity, but you can predict the evolution. This is the Glapp equation, and you have to do the initial condition. Now, now I want to study quantity which are really inclusive, and I want to have the idea of how is the shape of the jet emission. In order to do that, you study a distribution in one of these variables, which are called jet shape variable. For instance, in E plus E minus, but in also other processes, you have a production of hadrons. Now you study the sum of the emitted hadrons, of the transverse momentum of the emitted hadrons along the thrust axis, or the thrust itself, which is transverse momentum multiplied by rapidity, essentially multiplied by the angle with respect to the thrust. So you see, by looking these two observables, that already you study two different regions of phase space because of the presence or absence of this factor, and you have many variables, so you can have a very detailed study of the radiation without picking up any particular hadron. That is the way you can do the calculation then. So this is the distribution that you want to compute, normalize at 1 for V equal to 1, say, when V is maximum. And this is the typical thing that you can compute in perturbative QCD. However, this is a quantity which takes contribution from hadrons, while in perturbative QCD you get contribution from partons. How can you solve the problem? The problem is solved in this way. Actually, it's not solved. This type of quantity have a property of being collinear safe and infrared safe. Collinear safe means that if two partons become collinear, then you can forget about the two partons and take the one parton with the sum of the energy, sum of the moment, three momenta. And the same is for some hadron which is soft, then you can just neglect it. Now these two properties, which are based on this observable, which are satisfied by these observables, are such that all the perturbative coefficients are finite, so they are they can be computed. And when I compute this perturbative coefficient, I compute the perturbative distribution. And what about hadrons? The hadrons are made up of partons, presumably collinear or even soft, so I can run the argument and substitute the hadrons with the parton. This, of course, is an assumption, and we don't have in the perturbative physics way to check it, but it's a well-educated assumption, and I have to say that it's working pretty well. However, the perturbative expansion that I just considered is non-convergent because of renormalons which arise from the fact that alpha run in the softest, in the large distance region. So let me say the classification that you have to do in order to, the operation that you have to do in order to compute this quantity. Now this is the quantity, and for instance this is the transverse momentum of the hadron, of the parton in this case. And now if you want to have V small, then the logarithm of V become larger, and in this case you get logarithm of V. The reason is because for V going to zero, you go to the extreme exclusive limit, where you have collinear and infrared divergences. If you stay away from V equal to zero, the divergences are screened, but they give rise to logs. So you have to resum them in order to have a reliable prediction. So you have to resum infinite terms in the perturbative expansion, and you start to learn in this way how is the structure of the radiation beside the vertices in the Lagrangian. So the classification is that the log of V, the log of the distribution, contain double logs. These are double logs and single logs and other pieces. The double logs are called double logs because they are coming from both collinear and infrared divergences. And single logs are single logs because they come either from collinear or infrared divergences. Now, if you sum this expansion, you get a result, which is a factor. One is the pseudo-conform factor, which is rather universal. And then there is a single log function, which depends on the specific observable. This is not finished, the calculation, if you want to make a prediction, because for V not small, there is no reason to believe that one of these terms is more important than another. So you do an exact calculation, at least to next to leading order, in order to control alpha running, the scale of alpha. And then you have to match the two calculations in such a way that this, the perturbative, the resum result, time a coefficient function, you have to select the coefficient function in order to reproduce the known results. So
not n plus
1,
but that
2 n. No, n plus 1 in the log is n plus 1.
Sorry?
N plus 1.
So it's not double logs then?
Well, the origin is a double log, which at the end, when you resum it, running coupling and so on, essentially is alpha log n plus 1. So you have a distribution at the end, this perturbative distribution, which is okay, a good prediction, small v, large v, it's okay. However, the expansion, strictly speaking, is not convergent. Why is not convergent? It's not convergent because in the perturbative expansion, in the perturbative evaluation, you use alpha running, and alpha running at the scale, and the scale go up to the hard scale, but unfortunately can go down to zero. That is because the presence of virtual graphs, where you cannot constrain anything to be not a large distance. So the physics of this feature is that you are going to probe hadronization through the coupling constant at least at the virtual level. It's unavoidable. And mathematically, you have a normalon, which is divergent expansion. In order to see this, you can compute, for instance, the perturbative average. Perturbative average will be a logarithmic integral, the running coupling time the Feynman integrand. Now, since this is a quantity which is finite perturbatively, means that this quantity for k small should vanish. So for k small, you get this integral. You do this integral with the running coupling, and you get a Renormalon expansion. So how can you cure that? Because that is there in your perturbative calculation, even if you did the calculation selecting particular approximation. So there are at least two prescriptions. One is that, okay, I have to do this calculation, but I have to say something about what is alpha del Mol scale. Actually, I don't need to say anything very specific. I need just to say what is the integral up to a given scale. Then if you introduce this object, that is, if you believe that you can talk about alpha running in the smaller, in the larger distance region, which is questionable, then you get this representation, and this representation is there is no any more any Renormalon. There is independence on this scale, and the cost is that you have to put this parameter, which correspond mathematically to the Renormalon ambiguity. You can do the same for the distribution, and okay, there is. Of course, an assumption here, but I want to show you, impress you with the quality of the result by introducing this alpha zero. This is the Brodmann distribution. The green one is the perturbative calculation at the accuracy I told you. And then you select the parameter alpha zero in such a way that you fit perfectly the curve. Of course, alpha zero should be in principle universal, so you study various quantity whether this is consistent, and say within an optimistic point of view, you say that you solve the problem. There is a second prescription which is interesting because it allows you to go to a much smaller value of V, which is introduce a shape function which is universal for all quantity, takes into account higher order power correction. And the quality of the curve is this. You see, this is, for instance, the EVJET mass distribution, and this is the perturbative calculation, and this is the non-perturbative calculation. You can go to very, very small ratio of the mass. Now I want to tell you a little bit the structure of the strategy you have to use in order to do this calculation. Now the method is based on factorization of collinear infrared singularities. And at the end you can phrase it in this way. You have suppose quark antiquark, E plus E minus. You have quark antiquark back to back. Then you have gluon radiation. Gluon radiation, so you have gluon radiation. Each gluon is radiated and then it branches. There are virtual correction and so on. However, we are talking about a quantity which is infrared and collinear safe. And for instance, suppose that you measure the energy of emitted guy. Now the energy of this, which is the parent, will be the same as the energy of all the product, including virtual correction to the results. Therefore, if you measure the energy, you can just forget about what's happening later on because of unitarity. So this is an effective way. In an effective way, you have independent emission. Independent emission can be solved by producing an evolution equation, and you get the radiator, and you get this result, essentially. Now, the branching which I was referring before certainly is an important information about the radiation, but it's not relevant here at this accuracy, except for the fact that it gives you the running coupling scale. So it's important to detect what is the scale for the running coupling, but as far as the dynamics is rather irrelevant because of the some rule that I'm using it. So you want to learn a little bit more about what's happening, about the radiation. Now recently there have been this new entry in this shape variable, which has been introduced by Dasgupta, has been emphasized by Dasgupta and Salam. So these are jet functions which are which take contribution only in a region of phase space, not in the full phase space. So for instance, the simplest case is you take a plus and minus, you go to the thrust axis, you take out a cone of size theta in, and then you measure the energy outside the cone, or the transverse momentum outside the cone. Okay, so you don't go to the jet. And there are many examples of this type. For instance, all the LHC physics is of this type. And the first observable that has been, jet observable that has been introduced in the origin of the time, Sternmann-Weinberg distribution, is exactly of this type. So this distribution is interesting because there are no collinear logs. So we were not familiar with quantity which didn't have collinear logs. Now this quantity doesn't have collinear logs. That's not. So sensitive to large angles of emission, and this is the interesting place because you have interesting region because you have to study the Hedgehog region among jets, where there is the color neutralization. Now, how you compute it? There are two contributions at this point. First contribution is the Bremsstrahlung contribution that I told you. So the gluon is radiated, is going already out of the cone, and then the rest, it doesn't matter because by unitarity can be resummed. The other possibility is that the gluon is going inside the cone, and then is emitting something outside the cone, just after one branching or after many, many branching. So in this case, there is no cancellation that I said before, and there is a leftover. Leftover is a correlation, so the distribution is given by pseudo-conform factor type plus time correlation. How do you study this quantity? What is the technology? Well, in order to study this quantity, you cannot go to an evolution equation, factorization, a thing like that. You have to take the multisoft gluon distribution. If you don't have it, you forget it. Actually, there is. So there have been a study, numerical study by Dasgupta Salan, and then an evolution equation, which I will discuss. So how are the basic multisoft gluon distribution? Multisoft gluon distribution are known since years, unfortunately in only the large n limit. So you take a plus and minus into quark, anti-quark, and then you are interested in soft gluon because these are the dominant region of phase space. So quark, anti-quark plus many soft gluon. So this is the distribution. The distribution contains a Chan-Pacton factor for the color matrices, and then a color-ordered matrix. Now, in the soft limit, you can use soft gluon factorization, and then you get the recursive relation, and then you can compute it. Now, the idea is this. You take the color-ordered matrix, and then suppose that n is the softest one, then it can be factored out, this is the theorem, into a dipole emission factor, like in electrodynamics, time the previous amplitude, which is without n. So there is no modification to this amplitude when qn is the softest one. Then you know the amplitude, you have the recurrence relation, you have to take the square of this. The square of this, unfortunately, you can do it only for the, at the planar level, because you cannot consider mixing, because it's it's very difficult. And this is the planar approximation. The planar approximation, the square amplitude is just this multi-dipole, sum of this multi-dipole expression. And it's very puzzling, the fact that this is an approximate calculation, but at the end, if you do it in pure Young-Mills, you get exactly the same as the Parker-Taylor maximum helicity violating square amplitude. So this is, in a way, is in large NC an exact amplitude at 3 level. Then you want to, then you say, okay, now I have all the this amplitude square. Now I want to compute the distribution. Now the best way to compute the distribution is to introduce a source for each emitted gluon. And the source is conjugate to the observable, so it's related to the observable. So the thing that you have to compute is to compute the generating function in which you have the distribution for n gluon multiplied by the sources for each gluon. The distribution for n gluon in the soft limit is known, because this is the phase space, soft phase space, and this is the distribution that we have computed. In order to have an equation, you need a factorization structure that you can read from here. So this is the amplitude, the distribution, multi-dipole distribution. You pick up any one of the intermediate one, gluon L, for instance, the most energetic one among the softest one. And then you split it into the product of two color amplitude, color distribution, from 1 to L minus 1, L plus 1 to N, time this factor, which is nothing but the soft dipole emission from the dipole AB of a soft gluon L. So you use this factorized structure, and from here you get this evolution equation. Evolution equation, as you see, is an evolution, because in order to pick up this splitting, you have to take a derivative. It's the integral over the angle, the dipole emission of the soft gluon Q, the source, and the product of the two distributions, which are coming from these two. And now you have to include virtual corrections, otherwise you are in bad shape. And the virtual correction can be included by using, you use a virtual diagram, you take a virtual diagram and you pick up, you do the Cauchy integral and you pick up only the contribution for the most singular pole. You forget about the contribution to the infinity, and this is the prescription for this calculation, for taking into account the virtual correction in this calculation. This is correctly normalized. Okay, now you have the evolution equation. You can prove from this evolution equation that if U is conjugate to a global observable without constraining the phase space, then this equation linearizes at the accuracy you wish. And if this is not constrained as a constraint in the phase space, then this equation is really a branching type of equation you have to solve numerically. Now, I suggest you a way to solve it numerically. Numerically by a Monte Carlo method. Monte Carlo method is that you have this evolution equation, no, that I wrote before. And now, in order to solve it numerically, first thing to do is you single out the pseudo-conform factor. The pseudo-conform factor is the solution of the linear equation. That means you drop this piece. This is automatically the solution. The integral is divergent in the infrared and in the collinear, then you have to put a cutoff. And the cutoff eventually can be relieved if you don't need it. Then the rest of the equation can be phrased in such a way that can be numerically integrated as a Markov process, in which you introduce the probability of the dipole AB into the splitting into dipole AQ, QB, and the energy, original energy E down to E. So this is the distribution. Distribution is the integral over E, the integral over the angle with the dipole distribution and the pseudo-conform factor, and of course the cutoff. So you are the process in the way that you have a much powerful instrument in your end, because you don't need to compute only, you can compute everything, because you have actually emission of any pattern you wish. You can compute actually all your possible observable. In order to be more precise, you have to include quarks branching, and you have to include the full collinear structure, which is not here included in the expression that they wrote here. At the end, then you have what is parton emission in all possible directions, which are according to the QCD perturbative rule that I. But you don't have hadrons. Okay, you don't have hadrons, so no phenomenology. And this is the type of diagram that you get out of the branching structure that I describe. This is a diagram in which is a particular event at the parton level, in which you have quark and proton antiproton, and then you have gluons emitted in the initial leg and gluon emitted in the final leg. Since I have a large n approximation, gluons are represented as double line. And now I notice that this line here, color line here, is connected to this color line here without emission, intermediate emission. And being connected without intermediate emission means that this is a color singlet. But since I don't have collinear emission inside, I don't have associated emission inside, I am putting a veto within the resolution that I decide, which is Q0, and the veto may generate a pseudo-conform factor. Pseudo-conform factor means that the mass is smaller, and so you have that the mass of this color singlet bunch of partons is smaller, and so you, in order to do phenomenology, you build up an hadronization model, which essentially consists, for instance, in saying that these two are transformed into one of the hadrons in the particle data table. These are details which can be inflated as much as you wish, but at the end is that for the important feature, for the gross feature, whatever you do is irrelevant, largely irrelevant. And that is because this mass is very small. So at this point you have everything that can allow you to make up a Monte Carlo program. And since 20 years ago, this is a game that started, and the Monte Carlo using factorization can deal with the plus and minus lepton hadron physics. These are the most reliable one in the sense that they have comparable QCD reliability, these three. And along this year there have been an enormous updating on all the Monte Carlo, taking into account new theoretical development and phenomenological and experimental results. To give you an idea of what is the thing that our experimental friends has in the end, is a list of process allowed by this Monte Carlo. So you push a button and you say, I want this process. Okay, these are, for instance, C plus C minus going into standard QCD or leptonic channel. This, I believe, start to be difficult to read. However, this is even more difficult, because here start hadron-hadron. Hadron-hadron involve W, Z, X physics and supersymmetry, just using factorization. You can even play with gravitons here, and this is deep inelastic. So this is what our friends experimentally says in their end, and this unfortunately is the instrument they use in order to say that QCD is solved. The interest of QCD is just the ground. So a final consideration. I think I gave you an idea of that since 73 there are exact and some perturbative results, an enormous quantity. I focus only on a very narrow direction. And where I offered, I gave you an idea of how much information we learn and how much phenomenological evidence that QCD is a good candidate for strong interaction. However, even being very careful, one has conflict with the confinement all the time. And these are solved with, not with, I mean, in the real way. I mean, they are usually confined, the problem of confinement, in the fact that you use factorization, so you can factor what you don't know in just a function, unknown function you can get from experiments. Or in this very good educated phenomenological assumption that for some quantities, hadron flows is just parton flow. So you do the calculation in QCD with partons. I think that now time is mature, that we have to make this jump from a field theory to a theory of extended object. And QCD probably is one of the focus that one has to keep in mind in order to do this jump. And there are, of course, two obvious questions. One is, if you make this jump, how you take into account all this perturbative QCD evidence that has been accumulated? And the other, which is, how you can, from idea that you grow up with study of extended object theory, how you can invent a better way or a more motivated theoretical way to model hadronization at the level we study now, QCD. Thank you.
Okay. Questions? Ready?
Just a remark. So this result about the summation of leading logarithms in the Sudakov-Fram factor and also in distribution of jet invariant mass, it's my result. It was obtained back in 79, several years before the earliest work besides.
Before?
It's my result. There was a paper of 79. I did it and resumed leading and next to leading logarithms in Sudakov-Fram effect in jet cross section.
No, I agree. I mean, there are thousands of people worked in the field, which I didn't quote. I think I have to take.
Pina, I have a question. You mentioned at some moment that you produce this maximum helicity-violating amplitude from this branching.
Yes.
Does it mean that if I start with the exact amplitude that implies this econal approximation for each branching, I will produce the result which will be exact result for the gluon amplitude if I assign helicity? Another way, to get the result, you didn't put any restriction on the helicity on coming and going gluons.
No.
But what you're saying is the soft limit, I will recover the result, which will coincide identically if I will start at exact amplitude, assigning helicity minus and plus.
Yeah.
Does it hold true if you go to loops?
Well, Here I use this amplitude from which I got the distribution, which are pure three level. Then in order to build up the structure to learn what is the radiation, I have to say what are the virtual corrections. Now for the virtual correction, I certainly did a crude approximation, which consists in taking in the loop integral only the pole corresponding to a soft gluon and throwing away everything else. This generates certainly the leading contribution, which I need, okay, and give a prescription which I can try to control at two loop level, but I don't think that at this level I will make a statement that these results will be the one loop equivalent to the one loop result, exact result. But at the three level is certainly the exact result.
You remember that we had a talk in the beginning of the conference that if you go to one loop level and calculate the exact amplitude, maximum helicity amplitude, you'll get in the result which is extremely simple. And now you're saying that you sort of also using this approach, also having simple results.
Yes.
So the question is, where is this simple result coming from that calculation considering the simple result you give having in your calculation?
No, but that I think that is reasonable in the sense that you look at the results that you must get. The result you must get is no masses around, so energy scaling simple. Energy dependence is also simple because there are particles around. And then you have to say that you must have collinear singularity, maximum collinear singularity, the fixed amplitude. That is why
I think that fixed the distribution.
Not there.
But I think that exactly the same word. I mean, my understanding was that the way how people check calculation of one loop amplitude in exact theory is they just said exactly the same word that
yes,
you have said
okay.
Now. Probably.
Stan, I didn't quote you.
You
I should
what?
Have. I did not quote you, but I
no,
should
you
have. But you are in the list, of course.
No, but on this topic about hadronization, you really didn't talk about exclusive process. You sort of said it made it sound like you could never want to consider an exclusive process. And there's a complete QCD theory of exclusive processes,
yes.
As you know. And the they're controlled by factorization theorems, distribution amplitudes, and so on, which are fundamental objects. And they are based on light front wave functions. And
yes.
Light front wave functions
yes.
have the quantum information of how you coalesce quarks and gluons into hadrons in the final state, as well as initial state processes. So I mean, it's not like we don't know anything about this field. We know a tremendous amount about how to write down
yes.
relativistic frame-independent representation of the hadronization process. So that's one topic. I like the tricks you have about the resummation and voiding denormalizing, but it's very close to BLM, so I'll mention that. But you don't really sort of use the full power of the BLM procedure, which is to separate conformal and non-conformal aspects of the theory. I mean, that's the real language for what you're doing. You put just the running cup in physics, and you dealt with it in a sensible way. With, for example, your method with Doc Schitzer. But on the other hand, all the rest of the physics, which is not associated with the beta function, is conformal physics, has no renormal on, and has theorems and wonderful things. But it also, the whole point of this separation is that you can do scale fixing. And so I think there's more to be done in this area, which
yeah,
just simply avoids the a lot of the confusion.
The reconstruction of the running coupling is done rather accurate level, is a two loop level essentially. There is a connection with the MS para two loop, which is at least at this point is consistent. No, I mean I have to focus in a direction. So there are 73 to now is 30 years. So there's been. Enormous quantity of information which I think a full week conference in order just to have a glance at all possible directions.
One last question for Matt. Is there an operator definition of what it means to look at any of these observables?
Say again?
Is there an operator definition of what any of these observables mean? That is to say, if one wanted to phrase the question as a gauge invariant question about observables in field theory.
You mean an operator?
Yes.
No. È giusto? Is it correct? No. There are quantities which are typically Minkowskian.
When you have double logarithms, normally it's difficult to formulate. It's not the right way. You but can resume just single logarithms, well, as Place XD back 30 years ago. But when it's double logarithm, it's not formulated in terms of the right way.
But in this sense, I would say that it's important to know, after all, details of how these quarks and gluons hadronize, whether it's just unity, as some models suggest, or maybe there are some correlations, and then it somehow sort of changed a little bit, which that means, I mean, the fact that there is no Euclidean formulation, but just Minkowski formulation, means that no matter what you do, it will be dependent on the dynamical details of how eventually quarks and gluons hadronize.
Okay, maybe we have time for one last question.
I just want to make a comment that if you're talking about relation between this idea of safety correspondence and QCD, there is a prediction which comes from the site, which is new for quantum QCD, namely these double logarithms, it's driven by the soft gluon radiation, which could be mapped in Wilson loops, and finally, you know that double logarithms are controlled by this cusp anomaly. And there is for Nikolov series, there is prediction that cusp anomaly in strong coupling regime behave like square root of lambda square. So this, to my mind, is just a prediction which comes from Nikolov series, which is new for point of QCD.
Okay.
I asked the question not because I didn't know the answer, but because I wanted to emphasize that there are profound formal questions which are not addressed in some sense through this way of phrasing the question as a complicated re-summation. And I'd like to see a lot more done to help us formulate the problem better.
Yeah.
Okay, let's thank the speaker again and just one further questions to the discussion.